Well, I think one thing we're going to do right out of the gate is define what pro-life is.
Scott Klusendorf talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That term is now being confused. It's being put up for grabs, and we're going to make clear what the pro-life syllogism is, how we can make that case for life with people who don't accept biblical authority, who maybe don't even know what it is we stand for, and are subject to being confused. So there's a crying need to clarify what pro-life means, what our actual arguments are, and then we'll look at five bad ways people argue against the pro-life case in the public square so that we can be prepared to give good, solid, Christ-honoring answers.
You can meet and hear Scott Klusendorf making the case for life at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Learn more about conference speakers and topics and register at issuesetc.org. I wonder, it seems as though feminism has been remarkably successful. It has, over time and with some effort, managed to get far more out of society, out of law, out of our social mores, out of men, to be frank, than probably the first feminist ever imagined possible. What was really driving that, and why, after so much success, do women seem to be, well, unhappy still, maybe even more unhappy than ever, discontented? Is something bigger happening here? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about feminism and indoor cat syndrome. Dr. Anthony Esselin joins us. He's a regular guest professor of English Renaissance and Classical Literature at Thomas More College of Liberal Arts in Merrimack, New Hampshire, author of the book Out of the Ashes, Rebuilding American Culture, and a recent column for Chronicles magazine titled An Age of Indoor Cats. Dr. Esselin, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. It's great to be back here.
How do you explain that after all the advances and successes of feminism, women seem more unhappy than ever before?
Oh, boy. You know, it is a little bit like asking, after the progress of lung cancer and a general organ breakdown, how come it is that this patient over here doesn't feel good? Feminism was based upon false premises. One reason why I cannot be reconciled to feminism in any of its forms is that even in its most innocent form, feminism predicates a fundamental separation of interests between women and men. That is, the good of women is defined as separate from the good of men, and vice versa. Well, that way leads to a familial breakdown and social breakdown, and it is a lie. The sexes are made for one another. And if you mess things up for one sex, or if you corrupt one sex, you're going to corrupt the other. So now women who are, I think by nature, made for relationships with other people, find that the society that feminism has produced is a society that is not filled with lasting and emotionally and even intellectually and culturally rich relationships. And of course they're going to be unhappy. They've rebelled against human nature and against the nature of man, the nature of woman. And, you know, if I shoot myself in the foot, I'm going to limp. Well, they're limping.
I'm wondering about this in terms of kind of identity politics. Is feminism kind of the original identity politics in that rather than finding the person's identity in our shared humanity, it finds it in some quality or other quality or characteristic that the other men cannot share. Men cannot know what it's like to be a woman.
Well, and women can't know what it's like to be a man. That's reason why we ought to be grateful for one another instead of the ingrates that we happen to be. I think that feminism rode on the back of a kind of individualism that was bubbling up in the 19th century. We can see it here and there, maybe even more than here and there in the American founding. Tocqueville had it in his sight when he visited the United States. And instead of actually working or continuing to work to correct that individualist error, the feminists jumped on board and well, now, my gosh, now everybody is supposed to be an individual pursuing his or her dreams. We hardly have the language to discuss the common good or even to discuss the fact that a human being is only fully human by means of relationships with others and a relationship with God. We hardly have the language even to talk about it.
What does all of this have to do with indoor cats?
Yeah, well, let's suppose that a real society and a real culture full of rich relationships and real relation to the natural world, which is always a corrective to human pride and human folly, let's suppose that you don't have that anymore. That was my idea in the article that I wrote for Chronicles. Suppose that your wealth and other features of your society shield you from the naturally correcting force of the reality outdoors, the natural world, okay? And suppose at the same time that you're wealthy enough to pretend that you no longer need to define yourself in terms of giving yourself to people, say the people in your family, to your husband, your wife, your children, and so on. Well, what do you get? And what I'm seeing is that you get madness. You get the same kind of warped personality that we see in cats. That was the idea. Cats that have been removed from their natural field of activity, which would be outdoors catching small critters. You turn them into indoor cats, and they have the same cat instincts without any object for them. And quite frankly, a lot of such cats grow morbid. They grow very strange. They still have this need for an exciting cat life, only the indoors doesn't provide it, and they end up treating everything that they see indoors as if it were a predator or something. I think that something like this is going on among us now. We don't have to do hard physical labor, for instance. We don't have to worry about making sure that the kids get fed every day, and a kind of healthy exhaustion at the end of the day, physical exhaustion. Nobody has that. But we don't feel ourselves to be real because we have no strong relationship to the natural world. And we don't feel ourselves to be real because we have no strong connection to our family in the past, our grandparents, all that is attenuated. So what do we become? We become like actors in a melodrama of oppression. We become morbid indoor cats. And I see this with both sexes, but I see it particularly with women now. It seems as if in order to be somebody, you have to claim that you too have had a terrible thing happen to you in your life. Some of these women have had terrible things. Much of this, however, is also a desperate need to be noticed. Look, I exist. I have been oppressed, therefore I exist.
Is it just kind of a generalized sense of victimization, or does it take on more specific forms? Give us some examples. You mentioned Me Too in a kind of sidelong way.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's take for granted that when it comes to the sexes, our society is completely messed up. I don't think I need to appeal to conservatives to make that point, because the so-called liberals, self-styled liberals, say it all the time. They say it all the time. They say that the relations between the sexes are horrible. All right. So if that's the case, then any person is going to have, by the time they're 25 or 30, plenty of rotten experiences with the opposite sex, because the sexes are doing rotten things to one another. That is simply a fact, okay? So it isn't as if they are making these things up whole cloth. They're not, right? But still, it takes on all kinds of measures of unreality, whereas people in older times would have quicker and healthier ways of dealing with a rotten person of the opposite sex. We have no ways of dealing with them now, because we ourselves, I'm speaking in very general terms, we ourselves are rotten. The rot goes all the way through. The rot is extensive and deep. So there'd be plenty of reasons for everybody to complain, except when they look in the mirror, then they don't complain.
Talk about those previous generations who, as you say in your essay for Chronicles magazine, just didn't have the time or energy left at the end of the day to feel oppressed.
You know, they didn't. Let's suppose you go back to my mother's generation. My mother is 83. Oh, Ma, I forgot your age. She's 82 years old. The sexual revolution had not hit our town when she was a teenager. It would happen about 10, 15 years later. She could take for granted that any man who took her on a date was not going to do certain things. Okay? That was taken for granted by both the boys and the girls. And that left them with a great lot of leeway to do things that were fun without fear. Right? Now, if somebody got out of line, then immediately a girl could slap him and demand to be taken home. Okay? And everybody would agree that that was exactly her right, and that's exactly what the boy should do. And if he did not do that, he would be risking complete social disapproval from everybody, all right, boys as well as girls. In fact, he'd probably get beaten up. So these things tended not to happen. If something like that didn't have got dealt with, right, you didn't have these long, lingering sagas of misery and oppression because there were clear rules. And rules, whether they are moral rules or rules that govern a kind of social etiquette, which are lower than moral rules but still important, they liberate people. That's something that the sexual revolutionaries never understood, that the moral rules are a power in us and they set us free. Okay? So with the sexual revolution, you robbed both women and men of a great measure of their liberty to do things without fear, to do things without harm, okay, and to be able to deal with bad things quickly, decisively, clearly, because everybody knew what the rules were. Now, nobody knows what the rules are. There are no rules. There are no rules. So we've bred this. I don't know how we're going to come out of it as a society. We have to turn back to the rules. The rules could have been given us. A lot of these rules could have been given to us by the wisest of the pagans. We didn't even have to listen to Scripture. But, of course, being Christian civilization, we ought to listen to Scripture, even for our own good, if for nothing else.
Dr. Anthony Esselin is our guest. We're talking about feminism and indoor cat syndrome. When we come back, we'll talk about how the relationships we do have are politicized. Stay tuned.
Scientism is not science. It's a dangerous and self-refuting philosophy that fixates on means but ignores wisdom.
Dr. Angus Manouge of the Evangelical Philosophical Society talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And it leads to the abolition of man. As man is reduced to a material object, it's used as a weapon by atheists and skeptics to attack religion as a source of knowledge. It begins with Bacon's dictum, knowledge is power, but it overlooks the way in which power corrupts.
You can meet and hear Dr. Angus Manouge making the case against scientism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles east of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a list of speakers, topics, and registration information at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. On this Friday afternoon, we're talking with Dr. Anthony Esselin, Professor of English, Renaissance, and Classical Literature at the Thomas More College of Liberal Arts in Merrimack, New Hampshire, author of the book Out of the Ashes, Rebuilding American Culture, and a recent column for Chronicles magazine titled An Age of Indoor Cats. We're talking about the effects of feminism, in particular on women. Dr. Esselin, I think I was talking recently with Mary Eberstadt, and she talked about how the relationships that we do have are often intensely politicized, especially the sexual relationship between men and women. And put me in mind of that March for Women that was held last year. I asked guest after guest, what are they protesting? One finally simply offered the answer, I think they're protesting men.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just a general upheaval of disgust. Now, it's entirely childish and selfish because, let me tell the ladies, that the men have all kinds of reasons to complain about them, too. But of course, it is true that men, being physically stronger than women, can do certain things to women that women cannot do feasibly to men. But that doesn't mean that women don't use their techniques of making other people's lives miserable against men. It is impossible to corrupt one sex without corrupting the other. And once you've done it, it hardly matters which one got corrupted first. I mean, both sexes have been corrupted for a long enough time now that there's no point in saying you started it or you started it. It's a complete mess. Now, these ladies have no idea what the mess is really all about. All they know is that they are not happy, and that the men somehow are responsible for their being unhappy, and that men should make them happy, right? They have not the slightest idea that their grandmothers, who might have complained about their husbands to the next-door neighbor lady, their grandmothers didn't have this just general degree of disgust and despair. They didn't have this. They came to terms with the foibles and the shortcomings of the opposite sex, and their husbands did the same. And politicizing this makes it, in fact, impossible for us to move forward, or that is to recover what we've lost, because politics destroys everything it touches now. Once things get politicized, there's no way you can even talk to people.
You say that what we need, like a little child that's actually allowed to play outside. I remember being able to play out. I think you and I are about the same age. I remember being able to play outside without any adult supervision until the sun went down. And my parents whistled for me to come home from down the block. They had no idea where I was. They just knew that I better be within earshot when they whistle. But like children playing outside, we need to develop some emotional antibodies. What are you talking about?
Yes, well, when children played outside, unsupervised by adults, they had to deal with the stubbornness of the natural world. Hey, you know that tree there? That tree is what it is, and just because you feel like climbing it, that doesn't make it so that the tree is not going to oblige you by helping you. It is what it is. And other kids are what they are, and you can try to figure out some way with the cocky and hot-dogging kid next door and the somewhat phlegmatic kid across the street, and the lazy kid, and then the hot-headed kid. You can try to get a game going of football or baseball, and you work at it. You do it. And if you've got a problem in the middle of the game because there's a dispute, you work it out, okay? And sometimes you yell at each other. But in general, you do, in fact, work it out. Otherwise, there'd be no game. And living like that, you develop all kinds of ways to deal with troubles that will inevitably arise in any social situation. You develop antibodies. But when kids are kept indoors, both in the literal sense and in this social sense, right, they don't build up those antibodies, and then they don't know what to do. Then every single criticism that comes their way is viewed as a threat. You can't now say to a lot of women whom you employ, you can't say, you know what, that's a very neat report that you gave to me, but it doesn't say anything. It doesn't help. You can't do that. Dare not do that, right? You can't say to a man, perhaps, you know, you dress like a slob. I want you to come in and dress like a professional. Everything, then, is a direct attack on the person's very fragile sense of self. It's terrible. Imagine what it's like when you have no strong connection to nature, no really strong bonds with other human beings, and no God that you fall down on your knees to worship every day. What's left for you? Your little ego. That's not much, you know? It's like being set out in a paper boat in the middle of a raging tempest in the middle of the sea. You're going down.
How does this manifest itself on the college campus where we are watching in real time the next generation come up ostensibly being formed for adult life responsibility, civic responsibility, family responsibility? What does it look like there?
Oh, boy. We've gone from a world in which the men at a college in, let's say, the United States or Great Britain in the year 1916, 1917, knew that they could be called up from there at any moment to fight in a dreadfully brutal and miserable war, right? We had to grow up fast. From there, we've come now to a world in which people have to be comforted by puppies because an election went in a way that they had not wanted it to go. We've gone from it being expected of us that we would have personal backbone, which would include intellectual backbone. So if you went to university and you believed something that the professor believed was wrong and he gave you arguments against it, you would be expected to try to hold your own or to examine the truth of your previous belief with evidence or with arguments. We've gone from there to education as emotional and personal validation if you belong to certain favored groups. If you don't belong to those favored groups, then you're out in the cold. But this is not education. This is not even good emotional therapy. This is a dose of opioid laced with poison. It's not even good opioid. And, of course, no real education can go on in that environment. I'm very glad that I am out of it now, where I'm teaching.
So, finally here, paint us kind of two alternative futures. One, if things keep going this way, where people are left, as you say, adrift in the fragile craft of their own delicate egos. Or two, and if you would provide us some sort of picture of how this might happen, if we manage to wrest back from this hopefully temporary madness the way that our ancestors lived and thought and dealt with one another.
That's the old story. And history teaches us that again and again. But I go in my mind, I'm actually writing a book about this. I finished the book. It's going to be a book on nostalgia, the proper meaning of it, which is a desire to go home. Also, in the Christian life, desire to go farther on the pilgrimage. I think those two things are flip sides of the same coin. But it's the old story. You either do or you do not come to your senses and say, why am I here wanting to eat the husks that they feed to the swine? I had it better even in just a worldly sense. I had it better in my father's house. I shall arise now and go to my father's house. That's the choice. It's always that choice, but I think it's very stark right now. We either continue to try to nourish ourselves on the husks that feed pigs and find that we actually don't like the taste of the husks. They don't nourish us. We don't like feeding pigs. We're starting to smell and sound and behave like pigs ourselves. It's just miserable, but we just keep doing it because the only alternative is to say, we got this all wrong. I know people right now, young men who I'm in contact with, who aren't even men of faith yet, but they're saying, what the heck is this world giving me? This is garbage. I'm feeding slop to pigs. I shall arise now. And I don't know what about the Father's house there, what they got going there. I'm not so sure about it, but at least I'm going to walk in that direction. It's better than what I'm doing here. Ultimately, they too will have to make the decision to go into the Father's house. Those are the only two alternatives that I see. It's continued degeneration, right? Or I shall arise and now and go unto my Father's house.
This is getting writ large, Dr. Esselin, on American history. We're writing history as it happens. And I wonder, what will, let's say your second scenario happens for our society, generally speaking, we come to our senses. 50 years from now, historians are going to look back on this. What do you think they will say, more sensible future historians will say, about this period in American life?
I think they will look upon it as if a mass insanity had taken over people. They will try to show how this insanity was inculcated through mass media and mass entertainment, which is a new phenomenon in the history of the world. Frankly, the insanity is everywhere. They will analyze how, for instance, people were so insane they couldn't even be consistent in their insanity, so that in almost in the same breath they would deny that there were any differences between a man and a woman and affirm that somebody could be a woman in a man's body, which makes no sense at all. They will have the better among them will shake their heads in disappointment and pity and say, let this be a lesson to us now that we do not repeat their errors. The less kind among them will simply condemn and laugh because we're not worthy of any better. We are now castrating boys for the Lord's sake. I mean, good grief. That's how low we've sunk. I am left speechless by the insanity. But it will be seen through. You can't fool nature. Nature is what it is, and people will return to an awareness of it. And we have the promise of the gospel that it will never be extinguished. It is the truth, and the truth is going to set people free, and when they're free, they're going to say, what the heck was I doing in that big, vast, wealthy pigsty? It wasn't fun. Even for the sake of fun, I should have left it, let alone for the sake of God.
Dr. Anthony Esselin is professor of English Renaissance and classical literature at the Thomas More College of Liberal Arts in Merrimack, New Hampshire, author of the book Out of the Ashes, Rebuilding American Culture, and a recent column for Chronicles Magazine titled An Age of Indoor Cats. You can read it and purchase Out of the Ashes at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Esselin, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, Hour 2 of Issues Etc. starts with This Week in Pop American Christianity. We'll talk about atheism for Lent with Pastor Chris Rosebro. Then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Jesus the Good Shepherd says, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life." We invite you to join us as we listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd and follow him who gives us eternal life. Sunday worship services at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible class at 10:30, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri, on the web at goodshepherdarnold.org. That's goodshepherdarnold.org.